Silent dictator I have appointed myself to give class this morning. I'm here in Bhagavatam class. If you would kindly turn to your curriculum, it should be inside your notebook on the front page. Right. We'll do a short overview before we begin today's class. So there are three different ways to render devotional service to Lord Krishna: sambandha, abhideya, and prayojana. They're sometimes called stages, but they're not. It's not exactly it. In any case, sambandha is the first section, which is a theoretical relationship with Krishna. Everyone with me here on the table of contents or on the course overview, right? Okay, so sambandha will be the first third of our classes, which will take us to the end of September, roughly. And then we'll begin with the abhideya, the functional relationship with Krishna. That will take us through the end of the fall semester and into the spring. And then the last portion is prayojana. It's not on your sheets here, but that will be in the spring semester, the ecstatic relationship with Krishna. So the classes, as you see, are divided by section, topic, and verse. The verses range all over the 12 cantos of the Bhagavatam. There are about 18,000 verses in Srimad Bhagavatam, at least by one way of dividing them up. So obviously, if we took a verse a day, it would be impossible to finish in our 120 classes we have, roughly. 130? Take us 30 years. 30 years. Okay, well, thank you. The physics department has done the calculation. How many light years is that? So we will have selected verses based on themes, and they will jump all over the Bhagavatam from the first canto through the 12th in the course of the first two portions, sambandha and abhideya. But today and tomorrow we are dealing with the introductory verses for Srimad Bhagavatam. So the first three verses of the text are given as a prelude, and they are all very significant texts, and Srila Prabhupada's purports in them are very extensive and thorough. I meant to bring my Bhagavatam. Could I trouble you to go to my office upstairs and bring the first canto, part one, from the top shelf of the bookshelf, the India edition? Now, this is the edition that Prabhupada brought with him to New York City from India in 1966. Srila Prabhupada was 65 or 66 years old when he undertook the monumental task of translating all these 18,000 verses to English, translating and commenting on them. So at the rate he was doing in India, he was publishing one book a year, starting at age 66. So that would have been difficult for him. He managed to complete about 27 volumes of Srimad Bhagavatam before he left this world. There was about 50 altogether by the divisions that he gave it. If you'd like to just pass this around, this is one of the original publications Srila Prabhupada produced in India. He produced with great difficulty. Translating alone, he did all the typesetting. He did all of the typing. He did all of the proofreading, all of the editing. He raised the money. He took the paper to the printer. He carried the finished books around for distribution. And all of this is an elderly sannyasi. So it is a great contribution, because Srimad Bhagavatam, as we'll discuss this morning, is unique among not only all the scriptures of the world, but all the texts of the Vedas. So please take a look at this. Handle it with care. It's 50 years old as you pass it around. In the class this morning, we're going to have a little analysis of the purport for the second verse. But before we start that, I'd like to read the first verse together in English. And before we do that, if you would kindly turn to page 43, we'll chant the first line of invocation as an auspicious beginning for today and every day's class. Everyone there on page 43? Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Of course, this verse means I offer my respectful obeisances unto the primeval Lord Krishna, son of Vasudev, and that invokes auspiciousness before any sacrifice. So let's all turn to the next page and read together to the translation for verse 1. Of these first three verses, the first verse is about Krishna. Okay? O my Lord, Shri Krishna, son of Vasudev, O all-pervading personality of Godhead, I offer my respectful obeisances unto you. I meditate upon Lord Shri Krishna, who is
the
manifested universes. He is directly and indirectly conscious of all manifestations, and he is independent because there is no cause beyond him. It is he only who first imparted the Vedic knowledge unto the heart of Brahmaji, the original living being. Why even great sages and demigods are placed into illusion, as one is bewildered by the illusory representations of water seen on fire, or land seen on water. Only because of him do the material universes, temporarily manifested by the reactions of the three modes of nature, appear factual, although they are unreal. I therefore meditate upon him, Lord Shri Krishna, who is eternally existent in the transcendental abode, which is forever free from the illusory representations of the material world. I meditate upon him, for he is the absolute truth. This is the first very philosophical statement to open the Bhagavatam. Please now turn to page 52, and we'll take verse 2. Now, you don't have to be a Sanskritist to appreciate Srimad Bhagavatam. And as I mentioned this morning, some people will have a natural aptitude for it. Some people find it like the hieroglyphics, very difficult. So either way is fine, but part of our study of Bhagavatam is to appreciate the sound vibration of the Sanskrit being chanted. So let's do this first responsively and just appreciate the beauty of the poetry and meter that is found in this. First we'll do the synonyms so we have an idea of the meanings. We could say these together. Dharma, religiosity. No, in unison, please. Religiosity. Let's try it all at once. Projitaha, completely rejected. Kaitavaha, covered by fruit of intention. Atra, herein. Parama, the highest. Nirmatsaranam, of the 100% pure in heart. Satam, devotees. Vedyam, understandable. Vastavam, factual. Atra, herein. Vastu, substance. Shivadam, well-being. Tapatraya, threefold miseries. Unmulanam, causing a brooding of. Srimat, beautiful. Bhagavate, the Bhagavat Purana. Mahamuni, the great sage, Vyasadeva. Today, having compiled. Him, what is. Va, the need. Parai, others. Ishwaraha, the Supreme Lord. Sadhya, at once. Vridhi, within the heart. Abhivrudhyate, become compact. Atra, herein. Kritibhi, by the pious men. Trushu Shubi, by culture. Tachanat, without delay. Okay, now responsibly, please. Dharma projita kaitavo traparamo nirmatsaranam satam.
Dharma projita kaitavo traparamo
nirmatsaranam satam. Vedyam vastavam atra vastu shivadam tapa trayon mulanam.
Vedyam vastavam atra vastu
Srimad Bhagavate Mahamuni Krite Kimba Parayar Ishwaraha.
Srimad Bhagavate Mahamuni Krite Kimba Parayar Ishwaraha.
Sadhyo Riddhya Prarudhyate Trakriti Bhi Shushu Subhis Tachanat.
Sadhyo Riddhya Prarudhyate.
Dharma projita kaitavo traparamo nirmatsaranam satam.
Dharma projita kaitavo traparamo nirmatsaranam satam.
Vedyam bastavamatra vastushivadam tapa trion mulanam.
Vedyam bastavamatra.
Srimad Bhagavate Mahamuni Krite Kimba Parayari Ishwaraha.
Srimad Bhagavate Mahamuni Krite Kimba Parayari Ishwaraha.
Sadyo Hridyavarudyate Trakriti Bhi Shushu Subhis Tachanat.
Sadyo Hridyavarudyate.
Who would like to try chanting?
Dharma projita kaitavo tiratara nirmat saranam satam. Vedyam vastra vamatra vastu sevadam tapatra yona mulanam.
Vedyam vastra vamatra vastu sevadam tapatra yona mulanam. Srimad Bhagavate Mahamuni Krite Kimba Parayarishwaraha.
Satyo Dede Avadate Shatri Shushu Shubhi Tatushanam.
Sadyo Hridyavarudyate Trakriti Bishushu Shubhi Tatushanam. Dharma projita kaitavo dharmamo nirmat saranam satam.
Vedyam vastavam atra vastu shivadam tapatrayon mulanam.
Vedyam vastavam atra vastu shivadam tapatrayon mulanam.
Srimad Bhagavate Mahamuni Krite Kimba Parai Ishwaraha.
Srimad Bhagavate Mahamuni Krite Kimba Parayari Ishwaraha.
Sadyo Hriday Abradyutetra Kriti Bihi Shushruk Shubhishtachanat.
Sadyo Hriday Abradyutetra Kriti Bihi Shushruk Shubhishtachanat. Right, anyone else like to try? Pardon?
Dharma
Kaitavotra paramo nirmatsaranam satam.
Vidyam vastava matravastu shivadam
tapatrayon mulanam. Vastava matravastu shivadam tapatrayon mulanam. Srimad Bhagavate Mahamuni Krite Kimba Parayarishvaraha.
Satyo Hridya Varudhayate Atra Kriti Bihi Shushu Bhishta Chanat.
Sadyo Hridya Varudhayate Chakriti Bhishu Shushu Shubhishta Chanat. Okay, very good. Everyone kindly have that memorized by tomorrow morning. We will. Okay. All right, let's read the translation together, please. Completely rejecting all religious activities which are materially motivated, this Bhagavat Purana propounds the highest truth, which is understandable by those devotees who are fully pure in heart. The highest truth is reality distinguished from illusion for the welfare of all. The truth uproots the threefold miseries. This beautiful Bhagavatam, compiled by the great sage Vyasadeva in his maturity, is sufficient in itself for God realization. What is the need of any other scripture? As soon as one continually and submissively hears the message of Bhagavatam, by this culture of knowledge, the Supreme Lord is established in his heart. Okay, so we have a lengthy purport. We're going to read it all straight through and then go back and kind of unpack it, dissect it. All right, who would like to start reading? We have one of the wireless mics here, please. Okay. Gaurlila will read there. Just pass it down. Yeah, thank you.
big, isn't it?
Could everyone just read a paragraph and pass it on? That would be helpful.
Religion includes four primary subjects, namely pious activities, economic development, satisfaction of the senses, and finally liberation from material bondage. Irreligious life is a barbarous condition. Indeed, human life begins when religion begins. Eating, sleeping, fearing, and mating are the four principles of animal life. These are common both to animals and human beings, but religion is the extra function of the human being. Without religion, human life is no better than animal life. Therefore, in human societies, there is some form of religion which aims at self-realization and which makes reference to man's eternal relationship with God.
In the lower stages of human civilization, there is always competition to lord over the material nature, or, in other words, there is a continuous rivalry to satisfy the senses. Driven by such consciousness, man turns to religion. He thus performs pious activities or religious functions in order to gain something material. But if such material gains are obtainable in other ways, then so-called religion is neglected. This is the situation in modern civilization. Man is thriving economically, so at present he is not very interested in religion. Churches, mosques, or temples are now practically vacant. Men are more interested in factories, shops, and cinemas than in religious places which were erected by their forefathers. This practically proves that religion is performed for some economic gains. Economic gains are needed for sense gratification. Often, when one is baffled in the pursuit of sense gratification, he takes to salvation and tries to become one with the Supreme Lord. Consequently, all these states are simply different types of sense gratification.
In the Vedas, the above-mentioned four activities are prescribed in the regulative way so that there will not be any undue competition for sense gratification. But Srimad Bhagavatam is transcendental to all these sense gratificatory activities. It is purely transcendental literature, which can be understood only by the pure devotees of the Lord, who are transcendental to competitive sense gratification. In the material world, there is keen competition between animal and animal, man and man, community and community, nation and nation. But the devotees of the Lord rise above such competitions. They do not compete with the materialists because they are on the path back to Godhead, where life is eternal and blissful. Such transcendentalists are non-envious and pure in heart. In the material world, everyone is envious of everyone else, and therefore there is competition. But the transcendental devotees of the Lord are not only free from material envy, but are well-wishers to everyone, and they strive to establish a competitionless society with God in the center. The contemporary socialists' conception of competitionless society is artificial because in the socialist state there is competition for the post of dictator. From the point of view of the Vedas, or from the point of view of common human activity, sense gratification is the basis of material life. There are three paths mentioned in the Vedas. One involves fruitive activities to gain promotion to better planets. Another involves worshipping different demigods for promotion to the planets of the demigods. And another involves realizing the absolute truth and his impersonal feature and becoming one with him.
The impersonal aspect of the absolute truth is not the highest. Above the impersonal feature is the Paramatma feature, and above this is the personal feature of the absolute truth, or Bhagavan. Srimad Bhagavatam gives information about the absolute truth in his personal feature. It is higher than impersonalist literatures and higher than the Gyanakanda division of the Vedas. It is even higher than the Karmakanda division and even higher than the Upashanakanda division, because it recommends the worship of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna. In the Karmakanda, there is a competition to reach heavenly planets for better sense gratification, and there is similar competition in the Gyanakanda and the Upashanakanda. The Srimad Bhagavatam is superior to all these because it aims at the Supreme Truth, which is the substance or the root of all categories. From the Srimad Bhagavatam, one can come to know the substance as well as the categories. The substance is the absolute truth, the Supreme Lord, and all emanations are relative forms of energy.
Nothing is apart from the substance, but at the same time the energies are different from the substance. This conception is not contradictory. Srimad Bhagavatam explicitly promulgates this simultaneously one and different philosophy of the Vedanta Sutra, which begins with the Janmadasya Sutra.
This knowledge that the energy of the Lord is simultaneously one and different from the Lord is an answer with the material speculator's attempt to establish the energy as the absolute. When this knowledge is factually understood, one sees the conceptions of monism and dualism to be imperfect. Development of this transcendental consciousness grounded in the conception of simultaneously one and different leads one immediately to the stage of freedom from the threefold miseries. The threefold miseries are: one, those miseries that arise from the mind and body; two, those miseries inflicted by other living beings; and three, those miseries arising from natural catastrophes over which one has no control. Srimad Bhagavatam begins with the surrender of the devotee unto the Absolute Person. The devotee is fully aware that he is one with the Absolute, at the same time in the eternal position of the servant to the Absolute. In the material conception, one falsely thinks himself the Lord of all he surveys, and therefore he is always troubled by the threefold miseries of life. But as soon as one comes to know his real position as transcendental servant, he at once becomes free of all miseries. As long as the living entity is trying to master material nature, there is no possibility of his becoming servant of the Supreme. Service to the Lord is rendered in pure consciousness of one's spiritual identity. By service, one is immediately freed from the material encumbrances.
Over and above this, Srimad Bhagavatam is a personal commentation on the Vedanta Sutra by Sri Vasudeva. It was written in the maturity of his spiritual life through the mercy of Nanda. Sri Vasudeva is the authorized incarnation of Narayan, the personality of Godhead. Therefore, there is no question as to his authority. He is the author of all other Vedic literatures, yet he recommends the study of Srimad Bhagavatam above all others. In the Puranas, there are different methods set forth by which one can worship the demigods. But in the Bhagavatam, only the Supreme Lord is mentioned. The Supreme Lord is the total body, and the demigods are the different parts of that body. Consequently, by worshipping the Supreme Lord, one does not need to worship the demigods. The Supreme Lord becomes fixed in the heart of the devotee immediately. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has recommended the Srimad Bhagavatam as the spotless Purana, and distinguishes it from all the other Puranas. The proper method for receiving this transcendental message is to...
The proper method for receiving this transcendental message is to hear it submissively. A challenging attitude cannot help one realize this transcendental message. One particular word is used here in the proper guidance. This word is sushruzu. One must be anxious to hear this transcendental message. The desire to sincerely hear is the first qualification.
Less fortunate persons are not at all interested in hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam. The process is simple, but the application is difficult. Unfortunate people find enough time to hear idle social and political conversations. But when invited to attend a meeting of devotees to hear a Srimad Bhagavatam, they suddenly become reluctant. Sometimes professional readers of the Bhagavatam immediately plunge into the confidential topics of the pastimes of the Supreme Lord, which they seemingly interpret as sex literature. Srimad Bhagavatam is meant to be heard from the beginning. Those who are fit to assimilate this work are mentioned in this sloka. One becomes qualified to hear Srimad Bhagavatam after many pious deeds. The intelligent person, with thoughtful discretion, can be assured by the great sage Vyasadeva that he can realize the Supreme Personality directly by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. Without undergoing the different stages of realization set forth in the Vedas, one can be lifted immediately to the position of Paramahamsa simply by agreeing to receive this message.
All right, so for our classes, we have notebooks for everybody. If that helps you, some people find it helpful. It's certainly not required, but if you would like to take notes, feel free. We try to allow time for questions at the end as well. No question is off limits. Everything is welcome. Okay? So we have a lot of information packed in this purport. So I'm going to use a PowerPoint here, the most simple PowerPoint ever created, to just kind of help you sort out the contents here. It's in four sections, basically. The first section of this purport deals with dharma and competition. The second with oneness and difference. Third with Vyasa's mature contribution. And finally, how to understand Srimad Bhagavatam. So we'll take these topics one by one. First, about dharma and competition. Everyone familiar with the word dharma? Yeah, so this is a word that doesn't translate well into English. The word religiosity really doesn't cover it. Prabhupada explains that the dharma of something is its inherent quality that cannot be separated. Yeah, like the dharma of water is that it's wet. If it's not wet, it's not water. It's something else. The dharma of sugar is that it's sweet. If it's not sweet, it's not sugar. So the dharma of the living being is what? Service. Service. That is the quality of any individual. One must serve somebody. But in the lesser sense, dharma is taken as religiosity. Just performing some ritual, going to church, being good. So in this respect, the verse begins by saying that Srimad Bhagavatam completely rejects dharma projita, kaitava, cheating dharma. Something that is presented in the name of goodness of religion, which is actually not. And then the verse and the purport go on to define this in a rather broad way, what is cheating religion. So in the opening paragraph, Prabhupada talks about the four cyclical activities of human beings. Not eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. It's mentioned also as lower activities that are shared with the animals. But in human society, specifically, these four things go on a cycle. Dharma, religion. Then, artha, which means economic development. And kama, which is sense gratification. And finally, moksha, liberation. So how does this work? Think of it in these terms. In our society, dharma means having a job and going to work and being good at your job, right? That is dharma. That is what a good person, responsible, tax-paying person does. And if you are good all week and you do your work and you go to your job, then what happens on Friday? You get your paycheck, artha, you know, economic development. And of course, as soon as you get the paycheck, then kama, sense gratification, Saturday, let me go out and blow it all and enjoy it. And then Sunday morning, oh, go to church, I'll never do it again. This moksha. And I want to be liberated from this. And then Monday morning, dharma starts again. So these are the cyclical inclinations of human beings. So Srimad Bhagavatam presents what's called paro dharma, is in this verse we're reading in our verse of the week. Paro means transcendental. So it is dharma, it is religion, but it's above these ordinary religious activities, which are always associated with economic development. Isn't it kind of a Judeo-Christian ethic in our society that if you're good, you'll be rich? If you're right with the Lord, you'll have money? You know, if you're poor, then there's something wrong with your life, morally, or ethically, or spiritually. So you get that right, and then you'll have money, and then you'll be pious. Then you'll be really religious, see. So Srimad Bhagavatam completely rejects that idea. It breaks this connection between money and spirituality. There are those in spiritual life who just want to reject money, but that isn't the Vaishnava's position. Rather, we can accept money and use it for Krishna. This is the point. So Srimad Bhagavatam begins by rejecting this cheating kind of religion. It is unmotivated. It is done for a different purpose, and that will be discussed here in more detail. Any questions on this part? Okay. So even in the Vedas, we don't want to be sectarian here and just criticize mundane religions. But the Vedas themselves are full of offers. Worship in this way and you'll get this result. Sometimes on our Akadasis, there's verses from the Padma Purana are tossed around. Oh, this Akadasi is worth 60,000 Ashwamedha yajnas. So Now, these are reasons why Srimad Bhagavatam is unique. It doesn't offer any such material boons. Rather, it has a transcendental purpose of pleasing Krishna. So, we'll do an overview of the Vedas in a moment, but just to make sure everyone understands, this is not a sectarian approach to spirituality. My God can beat up your God, you know. It is rather a scientific evaluation. Why are we performing spirituality? What is our motivation? What is our purpose? So the benefits of this transcendent, of Paro Dharma, are saintliness. As Dr. William Deadweiler put it, Srila Prabhupada came to the Lower East Side of New York in 1966 and convinced an audience of Bohemians that sainthood was a viable career option. The qualities of a saintly person are nicely described in the third canto. Tatikshava karunika. What tatikshava is tolerance, and karunika, compassion, kindness. Ajacha satrava is another. That means one who has no enemies. Others may consider a devotee their enemy, but the devotee does not consider anyone an enemy. And shanta, peaceful. Yeah. What am I forgetting? Yes, the qualities of a devotee and of a good taxi driver. So the saintly qualities manifest automatically in the life of someone who understands Srimad Bhagavatam. This is the positive incentive. If a person's not interested in these things, then Srimad Bhagavatam will have no interest, hold no interest for them. Who can think of a verse from the Bhagavad Gita on this point? It begins, Manusyanam Sahasreshu. Yes, what is the translation of that in brief? Out of thousands of people, hardly anyone is interested in spiritual life. And of thousands who are interested in spiritual life, almost all of them get misled. Hardly one comes to know God in full. It's very rare. I realized the other day that Prabhupada initiated about one out of every million people on earth. Radhanath Maharaj, by the way, has initiated about one out of every 500,000. Jayapataka Maharaj, one out of 10. No, just kidding. It is exceedingly rare for someone to even take an interest. And this is because the benefits of a life of devotion are without any material benefit, right? You don't make money. You don't become famous. Actually, you do become famous, but amongst the devotees, you become famous. Prabhupada said all over the world, you become famous. You just chant Hare Krishna. But as far as the ordinary people are concerned, they think it is a waste of time. They cannot imagine why anyone would want to get up early, you know, to chant on beads. They cannot understand the value of these things. So Bhagavatam begins with this. You know, the word Bhagavan means what? One, the person who is full of all six opulences, which are fame, strength, beauty, knowledge. Yes. Strength and renunciation. Do we get them? Okay. So Sadashwarya Purya. These six qualities, the person who has them in full is God. And so Bhagavan is this person. Bhagavad Gita means the song of God. Srimad Bhagavatam means the beautiful story about that beautiful person. This is the quality of Srimad Bhagavatam. It tells the biography of God. But that doesn't come until the 10th canto, and we need to go through it progressively in order to be able to appreciate that stage of the Bhagavatam. So that will be in the spring. By then we will all be self-realized souls. Okay. Any questions? The first section? Okay, so the next Next part of the purport deals with this philosophy of oneness and difference. Very abstract language, it seems. Very philosophical, Prabhupada writes, nothing is apart from the substance, but at the same time the energies are different from the substance. What does that mean? So, the substance, he says, is the root of all categories. What this means is that everything comes from God. God is the root, is the basis of all existence. Sometimes people wonder if bad things come from God also. How could God allow that guy to go into the Batman movie and shoot innocent people? You know, where was God when this happened or some other disaster? They don't understand, Prabhupada put it, that God has a front side and a back side. You know, what may appear to be very good to us is part of God's energy. What appears to be very bad to us is also part of God's energy. So everything, all existences, all categories have their root in Him. This word, janmad yasya, that Sanskrit phrase means that everything comes from the Absolute Truth. In the first verse that we just read a few moments ago, the first line of the Sanskrit is janmad yasya. Janmad yasya yaton vaya, the first verse of the Bhagavatam. And of another important Vedic scripture, the Vedanta Sutra, the same phrase is used in the very beginning. Janmad yasya yataha. Everything comes from the Absolute Truth. So nothing is separate from God. There is no Satan competing with God in a neck-and-neck race. You know, there is no second person. What is good comes from God. What is bad comes from God. All existences come from Him. And they all have a specific purpose, which is what? Well, in this, yes, in terms of our connections, yes, to bring us back to His service. But ultimately, what is the purpose of all existence? If you were God, what would you do with your creation? Yes, for His pleasure. So even those things which appear to be negative towards us are also ultimately for His pleasure. And why? Because they help us understand the futility of a life without Him. So, janmad yasya, this is the meaning of this important concept from the Bhagavatam. So the fact that everything comes from God allows it to include these two divisions of Vaishnava, or rather Vedic philosophy, monism and dualism. I don't want to get too technical here, but monism means that the goal of my spirituality is to become one with God. Dualism means that I am separate from God. So how is it possible that these two states of being could exist simultaneously? This is called in Sanskrit, achintya beta beta tattva. Some pop group made a record of called this.
Kula Shaker.
Yeah, Kula Shaker. Could you sing a few verses for us? Yeah. Okay, so it was interesting to hear this very esoteric facet of philosophy in that venue, but it's actually not that difficult to understand. What it means is that the soul, the non-material part of our existence, is one with God. God is pure spirit. We are pure spirit. But at the same time, we are different from Him. He's complete spirit. We are tiny parts and parcels. Just like the ocean is comprised of a certain combination of minerals and water. And a cup of water from that ocean is comprised of the same minerals and water. But in quantity, they're vastly different. You can swim in the ocean. You can't swim in the cup. So in the same way, in quality, we're one with God, but in quantity, we're vastly different. This is achintya beta beta tattva. Now, why is this important for your final exam, you know, to get a good grade? No, this actually Tapo Trion Mulinam. It uproots miseries from our lives. People try so hard to get rid of miseries. The whole medical profession is based on it, right? So many ways. Basically, life in this world means a constant attempt to get rid of miseries. We think we're enjoying when we're eating. What we're actually doing is just staving off the hunger for a while, right? If it's cold outside, we put on a warm coat and think, oh, this is so nice. But we're just staving off the misery of the cold. So the Bhagavatam and this understanding of our oneness yet difference with God allows us to pull out the miseries of life at their roots so they don't come back. How does this happen? First, in this purport, there are the three types of miseries are defined. Do you remember them? Anybody? First one is adiatmic, right? Which are miseries produced from one's own mind and body. Yeah. We are self-contained in this world. We have our own miseries built in. And then? Adibhotic. That's right. In case the miseries that we're carrying around with us aren't enough, then everyone else in creation can supply additional misery. You know, from the mosquito to the spouse. And finally, the adidaivic, which are? Yeah, miseries beyond, catastrophes, Prabhupada said, that are beyond our control. So these three miseries affect us superficially, but they don't affect us at the deepest core of our being, because we are not this body that's suffering all of these miseries, you see. So understanding our relationship with God, how we can be one with Him and yet different, that is possible through service. This is called sambandha, the theoretical relationship. When it comes into practice, then it just blows us away by how it relieves our problems. It seems so obtuse. You know, generally you're trying to solve your problems by some direct method. I'm feeling tired, so I take some 5-hour energy. I'm feeling wired, I have insomnia, so I take a sleeping pill. You know, it's always some direct method to address our problem. This is very oblique. It comes at a different angle. It does not appear to be directly addressing our problems in life, and yet it has this amazing effect of doing just that. Right? Prabhupada wrote in his Vyas Puja offering, unknown to all, it's full of grace. This life of Krishna consciousness. Unknown to all, it's full of grace. Nobody can figure out why devotees do what they do, right? But we do it because we're having fun. And that's, isn't it? I mean, if it weren't fun, could you pay anyone enough? Okay, your job is to get up at 4:30 and come and dance around a plant. And if you don't do it, you're fired. And you have to smile. Right? So this is the evidence that the threefold miseries are being relieved, and our natural joyful state is coming out. Any comments on this? Okay, so the last section of the purport. Oh, sorry. As I mentioned, yeah, this relationship is the basis of our devotional service, that God's the boss and we're the das, we're the servant. Finally, Vyasa's mature contribution. Vyasa compiled all of the Vedic literatures. It is the most exacting and extensive compilation of religious or sacred literature on earth. The Vedas, there are 18 Puranas, 180 Upanishads, the four Vedas themselves, vast Mahabharata, which Guinness said is the longest book in the world, the Ramayana. There's just practically a limitless body of Vedic literature, which is always being expanded, by the way, by new contributions. But the core of the Vedas was all compiled by Srila Vyasadeva. And we will read later about why he was dissatisfied with all of his work before writing Srimad Bhagavatam. But Vyas recommends Srimad Bhagavatam above all others. Now I'm going to ask you a question. Who do you think is speaking this verse that we read this morning? Completely rejecting all religious activities which are materially motivated, this Bhagavat Purana propounds the highest truth. This beautiful Bhagavatam, compiled by the great sage Vyasadeva in his maturity, is sufficient in itself for God realization. Who is writing these words? Vyas himself, that's correct. Yeah, it's not Sukadeva. Sukadeva has not started speaking yet. So how is it that Vyasadeva is talking about himself in the third person? Can anyone explain? That's right. That's right. He is actually a player. He's a character in the narration. But he speaks about himself in the third person. He doesn't say, well, I wrote this when I was mature. No, he says the great, he even calls himself Mahamuni, the great sage, compiled this in his maturity. But this is a hint that everything else he had written was contaminated with the, to one extent or another, with these, Kaitava Dharma, with this idea of religion for the sake of piety and economic development. So Srimad Bhagavatam alone is free of this quality. See, isn't it true in India people worship gods? Why do they worship gods? Because they want the gods to give them money and be nice to them. You know, every taxi in Delhi has a deity on the dashboard, right? And it's, whether it's Jain or Sikh or Muslim or Hindu taxi driver, right? So this is unique about Bhagavatam. It's called the Amala Purana, the spotless Purana. It has absolutely no tinge of this. It is simply meant for helping us uncover our spiritual life. And this is why we study it at the virtually at the exclusion of all others. So the final section here, how to learn Srimad Bhagavatam. Shushushu means being eager to hear. Hearing it from proper authority, Srila Prabhupada's books are proof. No one became a devotee of Krishna before Prabhupada's books. And to be eager to hear Srimad Bhagavatam is the result of many lifetimes of pious deeds. If you're sleepy during class, that means you have a few lifetimes to go. Actually, Srila Prabhupada said that Srimad Bhagavatam is the sure cure for insomnia. We do our best to make the class interesting. It's very philosophical subject matter. It's very profound in that because it has this incredible effect of making us saintly and relieving our miseries, it's extremely valuable and worthwhile. So this is the result, just like if it's time for breakfast and you're hungry, this is a result of past pious deeds, you know. If it's 9 o'clock and you're sleepy, this is the result of many lifetimes of pious deeds. So when it's Bhagavatam class and you're eager to hear, then this is a very auspicious state of affairs. So this invocation, this verse of invocation that we read this morning is meant for that purpose, to help us create an appetite for what's to come. So, any comments or questions on the purport or verse this morning? I know that was a lot of information. I hope this gives you some.
The purport, Srila Prabhupada mentioned that Srila Vyasadeva is the incarnation of Narayana.
Yes.
So, how do we understand that very exactly? Is it mentioned in the Bhagavatam
actually? Is it mentioned in the Bhagavatam that Vyasa is an incarnation of Krishna? It is indirectly mentioned that the Bhagavat Purana that he wrote is the incarnation of God for this age, for example. So this is indirectly showing these literary incarnation of Godhead. But it's not described specifically as our other incarnations. Vyasa has a degree of immodesty, you could say, but not that degree. Yes. Yes. He talks about Bhagavatam at the end, yes, as for this age. Yes, Prabhu.
I was just going to say that I was hearing a class the other day where she was saying that, so, as you're saying, Krishna's the source of all incarnations, he's the avatari.
Mm.
And so, an incarnation in Orion is just. just to document, because there's so much to write. Like, there's a lot to talk about. There's a lot to spread out so that way people can understand what they're going to be looking at.
I see. It takes to do that. Very good. All right. Thank you very much. Any other learned comments, questions? Thank you. All glories to Srila Prabhupada and Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.